This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Indeed. Indeed is a hiring partner that gets you what you really want, a short list of quality candidates as fast as possible, because you can do it all, attract, interview, and hire all at Indeed. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/creative. Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host, have been since 2005. Yes, believe it or not, we've been doing this since 2005. That's a lot of episodes. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, Herding Tigers, The Motivation Code, and a new book that's coming out next year that we'll be talking about at some point soon. One of the things that I love talking with people who are, you know, who are out doing things about is how they choose their ideas. How do you know which idea to work on, and how do you know which idea to let go of? How do you know which idea to invest resources in, and how do you know which ones you should probably try to just shoestring until you start to see promise? How do you know where to invest your finite time and energy? You only have so much time in your life to do your important work. So which work do you choose to work on? Today's guest is going to help us sort through that. It's Julian Smith. Julian's been on the show before. You may know him from way back in the day as co-author of New York Times bestselling books. He also founded a company called Breather, which was phenomenally successful. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And he has a new company called Practice that just raised a round of investment from led by Andreessen Horowitz and others, $10 million round. And we're going to talk about how Julian builds. What is the process of building things? How does he make decisions about what he builds? How does he know which ideas to work on? And much, much more. If you're someone who is building something or you like building things, and I wrote about this in Herding Tigers, I talked about the three kinds of jobs for builders, jobs for optimizers, and jobs for fixers. This is from my friend David Weiser, who's a hiring consultant. He used these three categories. And I wrote more about this in Motivation Code, actually, because those terms describe different kinds of motivational drivers that bring engagement in our work. But I would argue that Julian is probably a builder. That's probably what he's wired to do, because he's out there building things. And so we're going to talk about what his process looks like, about how he chooses ideas, and much, much more in this interview. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Julian Smith. By the way, before we dive in to the conversation, we have launched something we call AC Premium. It allows you to get ad-free episodes every single week, bonus episodes, including episodes that are not publicly available. So we're doing a series on Die Empty right now. I've just released two bonus episodes on different chapters from Die Empty to the AC Premium community. You also get access to courses on the Accidental Creative site that are not publicly available courses, and much, much more. So if you want to check it out, just go to acpremium.me. That's acpremium.me, and you can sign up right there. Okay. Without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Julian. Well, it is my great pleasure to welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast, actually to welcome back, because I think you've been on before, Julian, but it's great to welcome back to the show, Julian Smith. Not exaggerating to say, Julian is one of the most fascinating people I know. Actually, probably one of my favorite human beings, even though he may not even know that, because I watch him and observe him from afar. And I just love everything about the way that he handles his interactions with people and all of that. And we can go into more of that. But Julian is a co-founder of Breather. Also the co-founder of a new company called Practice, which, by the way, just announced a $10 million round with Andreessen Horowitz, which is absolutely huge. Julian, sorry, we won't have time to talk if I keep talking about all the things I like about what you're doing, but welcome back to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom.
So we sat down for a conversation in Nashville. We were both speaking at a conference. This is years ago now. We both sat down in a bar and you pulled out a napkin and you sketched out something on a napkin for me that was just an idea in the back of your mind, I think, at the time. And that went on to become Breather, which is remarkably successful. And now you've got Practice, which is also, boy, just taking off like crazy. Give us a sense of the scope of your work. So talk us through who you are, what you do, you know, what you've done. What should we know about Julian Smith?
Man, so it's interesting. I have done so many different things. There are these people that just do one thing and they just do that thing over and over and over again. In my case, I follow my passions, like whatever that is. So when you and I knew each other, I was writing books that turns out I had a career doing speaking, which is, you know, what you're talking about, that story. And I ran a successful blog and podcast on Sirius Satellite Radio for a while. Then I started companies, and really, I think about what I'm good at now, I'm really good at looking at trends ahead of time and being like, huh, that could be something, and kind of leaning into them before they become something, right? And so that was true with Breather. It's true with Practice. It was true with, God, a lot of things, podcasting and other stuff like that. And, you know, I would say that I'm an entrepreneur, but more than anything, I follow my passions and I follow the things that I'm interested in doing. And I that tends to lead to cool projects that I build and companies that I start.
So tell us about the two most recent projects. Tell us about a little bit about Breather, because people may not be familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And then tell us a little bit about Practice, which is your current project.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm super fascinated by, you get fascinated by technology, but by talking about technology, the arc that, and the path that most people don't follow is most people are speakers and they're writers and they like their personalities, you know, their talent, quote unquote. And to me, I was that person who was speaking a lot about tech and how it worked, but I had never really run a company before. And one day I was like, I'm actually just going to go out and build something. And the company that I first built was a company, Breather, that got up to, it raised like $150 million down. I had never done that before. I had no idea what I was doing. I had about 250 employees at the height of it. And it was in 10 plus cities. And it was really based on the idea of being able to, from a phone, just book a space in the building right where you were or next door to where you were and being able to open the door with your phone and a beautiful space opened up. It turned out to be used mostly for productivity. Big companies started using it and small, you know, therapists and entrepreneurs, podcasters used it to record. And gigantic companies like Spotify used it to the tune of $1 million a year, right? So it was a crazy business. It was the first business I ever started based on the idea of, oh, you can unlock a door with a phone. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I did an interview with Chase Jarvis out in LA, and it was sort of maybe a little bit early on in the life of Breather. And he's like, yeah, we got this great space with this company called Breather. Have you heard of it? And I'm like, yeah, I've heard of it. It's awesome. But that was like the first time I interacted with someone who was actually like you, and it just like took off. It seems like from there, it just kind of took off all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, when you raise a lot of money, it helps definitely to have something take off. But that is that's because you start out really ambitious. And I think the big change from being a writer to being an entrepreneur was, wait, hold on a second. I can have a lot of leverage. I can do something really big, really fast. When I figured out I could raise a lot of money, and doesn't mean it always goes the right way. I was like, huh, how big can my ideas and my ambitions really get? And that was a big change for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So then at some point then you decided, okay, Breather is kind of at the point in its life cycle and its arc where it's time for you to kind of move on and focus on something else. What was that process like? And then tell us a little bit about your new project now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it's so interesting, right? Because I think anybody who's listening to this, you have this current project and you really believe in this project, no matter where you are in the path of it, right? You're at the beginning or at the end or something. And for me, especially, I was incredibly attached to it. I thought, this is the one good idea I'm ever going to have. I actually believe this. And so I thought, I'm never going to start a company again. It's really too hard. And it's too, and the arc is too long. You know, as you know, Todd, like you write a book every year if you want to, right? And the arc of a company being 6-7 plus years is just nuts. But it turns out that compounds itself. And so when we hired an outside CEO, me and the board to do that, I stayed on the board. I watched from the board level And I was like, I'm going to take a really long break and really point myself at the thing that I want to point myself at, but I don't know what that is yet. And I was had the good fortune to be able to do that for 12, 18 months. I had analyzed what entrepreneurs do. And it turns out, I don't know, this is just like a dumb thing maybe, but like I'd noticed Jack Dorsey, the Steve Jobs, all these people that have many companies that became successful in one way or another, they all had an arc of something like 12 months or something in between those companies. And in some cases, it was very, very short. So I thought, oh, in my mind, I was like, well, if I go for over 18, 24 months, I'm just never going to do anything again because I'm just going to be too, it's going to be too cushy and I'm never going to go back to working really hard. But the nucleus of wanting to start another company came from people that I really want to work with, which is really the core of how I think today. I do think about projects and I'm interested in projects, but more than anything, I just want to work with really talented people. And that's what you really get in venture-backed tech companies. Because of the crazy amount of money that's involved in it, often, not always, often just amazing, uniquely smart, uniquely hardworking, uniquely passionate people go into it. And so to be able to get people like that together and work on something ambitious is always, it's just incredibly compelling. And so we started a company practice, the objective of which is to be able to really take the solopreneur, the person who has their own business, and surround them with powerful software so that they could become almost like a firm of one. How much can you do with a single person with just great, amazing software around them? And how much could they do by themselves with no other employees?
I love this idea, you know, as someone who, you know, has to deal with a lot of that, right? I'm dealing with a lot of clients and all over the world and, you know, with people to help. But at the same time, you know, we're almost at the point now where a solo practitioner can manage everything with really great software. If they have the right software, most people are out there trying to figure it out and cobble together, you know, trying to somehow link together all these different services to make everything work. And then one link breaks and everything breaks. And, you know, so I love this idea. I can't not ask you the question. How do you choose which idea to work on? You know, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have millions of ideas, but ideas are, you know, a dime a dozen. At some point you have to say, all right, this is the idea I'm going to work on. How do you decide?
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I've worked on enough things. Like I look at them now and I go, okay, well, here's the things that I'm good at, right? I'm very good at empowering, single people, individuals versus, let's say, some people that are really good at coming up with companies that get sold into other companies, right? Like Salesforce or whatever. I know I'm not good at that. And so I know that whatever I do, I'm going to be pointing it at probably a single person or a small group of people. And I know that I'll be interested in doing that with other people that are super interested in design and tech and other things like that. So I would say that it comes from looking at trends, looking at a current market. Like when you look at an electronic lock and you go, you can open that with a phone. That's pretty interesting. Then your mind like starts to open up and go, wow, but how many doors could it open? Like, could it open 1,000 doors? Could it open 10,000? So that kind of thing is super interesting to think about. So it's almost like looking at how far something could go from a, you know, business perspective. You would say, what is the market size of it? But I think it's much more interesting to view from a technology perspective and say, how could a single thing change the world? And how big could a single thing become? If it's a book, that's the same. It's how big could an idea become and change the world, right?
Yeah.
And if it's a company, you think, okay, well, how many people could this really help? And so when we thought, especially after COVID, especially after this phase of the world, you really look at it and you go, well, actually, the world has changed a lot. Like, people are very interested in their own freedom to be able to and autonomy to make their own decisions. And they're really interested in being able to do that from the place that matters to them instead of from an office, which is interesting considering my last company was a commercial real estate company. And so I look at that and I go, okay, so, you know, there is an imperative for people to be autonomous and to be out there doing their own thing. that's something to get on the back of. You know, it's like when you're surfing and you can look out to the waves that are coming, not just the wave that you're that is where you're at right now, but like the coming set 2-3 waves down. That's the one you want to pay attention to. It's a little bit down the line. You might not catch it right, but if you do catch it, it'd be much bigger and much more interesting.
Yeah, you know, I love that analogy because I think you know what you're talking about is trends, not fads, right? There's a difference between a trend and especially a coming trend and a fad. And I think so many people jump on fads, which is kind of akin to like catching a wave right before it hits the beach. You know, it's like, okay, I got it, boom. Right. And then you're on the beach and everything's over versus developing that ability, that sense to be able to look out in the ocean and say, okay, that's the wave I need to catch. It's coming. I got to prepare myself, be prepared for it. But that's also part of it, right? Like you have to be positioned to catch that wave when it comes. If you're not positioned, you can't suddenly get in place. You know, what are some, you know, just for people out there who are in a place where they're trying to figure out what their next move might be, what are some ways we can position ourselves to be able to learn to spot those waves when they're coming?
So one of the things that I figured out over time is that you actually only get a few bets in your life. It's really interesting when you think about it from the lens of startups, because startups take such a huge amount of time. You think about them as being fast growing, and they are fast growing. But if you're going to make a bet, you know that you can't make like 10 of them in a lifetime. It's very difficult. It's not like different than like, say, an agency model or a book model. So you're like, you look at it and you go, okay, well, can I do this for 5 years? Do I care enough about it? Does that matter enough to me? And so for us, when we started with practice, we started with coaches. And the reason we started with coaches, we've been surrounded by coaches our whole life. We know that coaching is having a moment in Silicon Valley and broadly right now. It also helped us like get Tony Robbins and some other investors on board, right? And so we look at that and we say, okay, this is like a group of people that really matters to us. My father was an exec coach for 40 years. So I know this. I know these people very well. I care a lot about them. So you have to have a personal connection to the thing such that it will drive you. And that's so important. I think people choose in a really mercenary way sometimes. And that mercenary aspect to it will ultimately like cause their interest to devolve. And then all of a sudden they're doing a thing that they can't care about. I didn't realize when I started Breather, I was super interested in the products. I actually might have been naive, but I didn't realize I was starting a commercial real estate tech company. And then all of a sudden I was surrounded by commercial real estate people. And I was like, these are not my people. And I did only, but then I was in it. And I was like, well, okay, what happens now? And I couldn't imagine another 5 years dealing with commercial real estate, even though I love the product that I created, right? And so that's a big part of it. And then from a trend perspective, it will look stupid. I'm just repeating what a famous sort of tech guy said, Chris Dixon, which is it often is stupid. It looks like a toy. People are making fun of it. You know, if it's consensus thinking, then that means that it's probably too late for the thing to be worthwhile in a lot of cases, right? It's so interesting as I talk to people about, because I think you and I back in the early days, we'd talk so much about social media as being like a thing. And as I talk to marketing people that I'm hiring today, and I was talking to investors and they're like, yeah, these people built this company built their thing off Instagram. You can't do that anymore. You have to build your thing off TikTok. And I'm like, oh my God. And so it's a whole like, and so if something is too evident, then it's probably not possible to ride that wave anymore. Yeah. You can't paddle into it.
Hey everyone, we're going to jump back into the conversation with Julian in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Indeed. So a good leader knows their limits. They know how to delegate. They know where they're needed and when they're needed. And when it comes to hiring, Indeed can be a founder's right-hand man. Indeed is a hiring partner that gets you what you really want, a short list of quality candidates as fast as possible, because you can do it all. Attract, interview, and hire all at Indeed. Don't struggle on your own to find quality candidates. Indeed can help you hire the right people right now. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process so you can find talent with the skills you need through tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Indeed makes it easier for star applicants to shine with over 135 assessment tests from cooking to coding. Pick what skills are important to you from over 135 assessments and get a clear view of your talents abilities faster. With Indeed assessments, you can reduce hiring time by 12%, according to Indeed data worldwide. So get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/creative. Again, get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/creative. Indeed.com/creative. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And now, back to our interview with Julian Smith. So Phil Libin, the co-founder of Evernote, told me, he said he chooses to work on projects that have just become possible for the first time in human history, but they're still really yes. hard to do, right? Because yeah. the fact that they're really hard to do means people have to jump over hurdles that they may not be willing to jump over. But if you're mm-hmm. willing to do that, that's the space where there's tremendous opportunity. Like you saw a phone unlocking a door and you're like, wow, that's really cool. That would be really hard to execute, but I'll bet not a lot of people are going to try to do that, right?
Yeah. That turned out to be true. And I think that is that comes with having an early passionate group of people that are super interested in that. Mm. So you're going to find a little tribe, right, of a certain size, and it's going to be a small size, and those people understand your thing. And then lots of people think, oh, this is dumb. And so long as you work that tribe, and by work, what I mean is you, those are the people that you're trying to satisfy what you're thinking about. That's how a small thing becomes a movement. It takes time for that to happen. But if you care about it, which is always the first lens, I have to care about it enough over the long term. And then second lens being, so long as the tribe is found and it's early enough and there's an ability for you to serve them in a way, which is how I think about practice, right? I think about serving people. And so long as you can do that well, it will go in your direction.
Well, let's say, how do you know when something isn't working? How do you know when it's time to say, okay, this is not the right direction. We need to either, you know, change direction, or we need to just completely abandon this idea and move on to something else.
Yeah. So it is a tough thing to do because you care about it. And what is difficult about leadership is that you need a combination of low ego and high ego, right? I heard Jack Altman say this recently. And so he was saying that is what leadership really is about. So when you're looking at it, you're saying, okay, low ego means I listen to the other people around me. They're smart. They're telling me, hey, this thing isn't working or blah, blah, blah. And then you need a high ego, which is your own almost arrogance or confidence that something is going to work, despite the fact that lots of people think that it's really dumb. And so it is. That is needs to be felt out in every possible situation. Because I run a coaching software company, I also coach first-time CEOs every little while. And when I do that, I talk to people whose companies are in whatever size, right, that are growing 20% every month, but also when other companies, and they can't make sales. And so that company that can't make sales, is it that it's too early and they have to keep grinding and working it? Or is it that the actual thing is not going to work? Only the person on the inside can really know. And only the person on the inside can really decide whether to spend their time that way. And only they know whether they want to spend their time on the earth working this specific thing, right? You really have to care about it.
Yeah, I think it's a hard line for some people to cross because they get so emotionally invested in their work. Or there's the sunk cost thing, right? Where it's like, well, I've already got so much into this that I can't give up now, because if I give up, then I've lost all this effort that I've put into it. And at the same time, you know, sometimes the best path is, okay, I'm going to close this down and move on to something else, because I'm wasting mental cycles trying to work on something that's just never going to happen.
Yeah. A certain amount of suffering, like you cross that line of suffering and you're like, okay, I'm good. I've learned all the lessons I've needed to learn. And you just know. I do free writing every morning, 1,000 pages. I've been doing it for, I think, over 20 years. And when I do it, I can mentally tell when I'm like, I have to get out of here. Like I have to stop doing this. You look at your situation and you know, maybe it's that period of doubt where it's not clear to you. That's the hardest part, because You're supposed to have doubt and confidence at the same time, and managing that balance is very difficult.
So I sent you a little email when I read the press release about your round that was led by Andreessen and Horowitz, and your response to me was actually, well, it was beautiful. It was funny and beautiful. You just said, "Thanks, man. I'm just out here building," or something like that, or just out here building things. I love that mindset. I love that you see yourself as a builder. That's what you do. You're just out there building things. What would be your advice to your fellow builders out there, the people who are kind of in that same place? You know, there are highs, there are lows, peaks, troughs, all of that. You know, what would be some advice you would give to your fellow builders?
Oh, man. Work on something with people that you love, right? With whom you're going to have disagreements, but those disagreements, you can work them out, right? I love, having started many companies, I've worked with a lot of people now over the years, right? And I've worked with them as a CEO. And so as I look at that, I say, oh, that's actually like when you want to go to work every day and you love the people that you want to work with, and you don't have, you don't, like, if you get an interview with someone, or one analogy is an interview, and you're like, I actually don't like talking to this person, be like, do not hire them. Doesn't matter how qualified they are. Don't collaborate with people unless, and you got to collaborate with someone to make something really meaningful in a lot of cases. And if you're doing that, just make sure that the people are right, because man, life is short. It shoots by you, and you had better, love your customer, love the people that you're working with, man. It is not worth it. That's my advice.
I love that. It's such great advice. So Julian, if people want to know more about you, or if they want to know more about Practice, where can they go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all over the place. Twitter.com/Julian, spelled the French way. And Practice is practice.do. You can go and check it out and join our waitlist if you like, if you want to take a look. And It's what you said. I'm out here building, you know. I got all kinds of little records of me building all kinds of things out there. So if you want to find me,
that's fantastic. Sure, Julian, it has been a distinct joy having this conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I know I learned a ton. I hope you did as well. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow the show on any of your favorite podcast apps. The Accidental Creator is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com for more shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.